You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Paranormal Portal Podcast. I'm Brent Thomas, your host, and I hope you're having a wonderful day. Thank you so much for checking out the Paranormal Portal. As always, it's great to see that people are taking an interest in what we're doing here. But this is our pilot show on the podcast, so we've been at this for quite a while on our radio and YouTube page, of course. You can find that at youtube.com/paranormalportal. And you can find us also on Facebook at facebook.com/paranormalportalradio. And if you have an incident or a paranormal event of your own that you'd like to share, please let me know. Just email me at paranormalportalradio@gmail.com. And let me know that this is coming from the podcast, if you would, please, so that I can keep it differentiated, because we have several different versions of the Paranormal Portal going on. So I want to make sure that the podcast stories can stay with the podcast. I guess I could share them both places, but you know, it just kind of holds a special place in my heart, as this is our first podcast yet. So really exciting time. I wanted to do a show about listener emails with ghosts. The ghost phenomena is incredibly widespread, and of all the paranormal phenomena, I think the ghost phenomena is probably the most relatable for the most people. Like it's kind of the one that either somebody has had a paranormal ghostly experience of their own, or they know somebody who has. And so it's kind of one that I think is most relatable. So I wanted to take some time tonight and go through some listener emails, which outline the experiences that our listeners have had. And they're really quite amazing. So I hope you guys enjoy this, and let me get started here. So our first one is coming from, it's coming from a listener. They chose to remain anonymous, and of course we always respect that. I don't need to name you, so if you do submit a story, it's perfectly fine if you want to be anonymous. That's no problem at all. It says, "My mom was in a nursing home with Alzheimer's at the end, and I kept hearing three knocks on the ceiling, so I thought the upstairs neighbor was dropping ping pong balls or something. But a couple days later, I was finally informed that my mother had died. At the viewing, I saw her literally standing by her own casket in a dress from the 1950s. She was with one of her old friends who had passed long ago. And I asked if she'd been doing the knocks, and she said yes. And I asked why on the ceiling. I thought it was the neighbor. And my response was, 'Knock three times on the ceiling if you want me,' she sang. And then I remembered, she always liked Tony Orlando and Dawn. And that was the kind of character that she was in her life." Very cool, and what an amazing experience to, of course, to be in such a state of mourning and probably pain and sadness, but to go to the wake of your own mother and see your mother standing there and having a dialogue as well on top of that, I think that's incredibly powerful and incredibly cathartic. And I guess I wish we all had those kind of experiences, because I think if we did, then the whole death journey for all of us wouldn't be quite so painful and harsh, that it would be more of a natural transition. So very cool story, and I really appreciate that the listener sent it in. I mean, you just never know with the ghostly tales, with ghostly apparitions and appearances. You don't know when, where, or how, or even why. In many cases, they just happen, and they seem to happen in their own time. But I think that they are incredibly powerful in it, and it definitely demonstrates a fluidness to our reality. I think that is so powerful and so potent, a reminder that, you know, we get so stuck in our own three dimensions and we forget to look around and we forget to marvel at the amazing things around us. And, I think, you know, we kind of have this arrogance about it. Like we think we've got it all figured out, but we don't. When things like this happen, we are very acutely reminded that there is so much more out there, ladies and gentlemen. So, at least for me, that's what these kind of experiences teach me. And I have to say, as a side note, that one of my favorite parts of doing the show has always been to hear the experiences of the listeners and things you guys have experienced out there. Because, you know, I've had many of my own experiences, but when I hear from you guys, the things you guys have experienced, the things you've seen, and every story seems to grab something new for me. Like each of you, when you experience these things, you may see something that nobody else has seen before. Nobody else has noticed. Like we all have our own individual way of examining and reviewing things. And so when you tell me your stories, it's like it really connects a lot of dots for me personally. So I think that it's a really powerful forum for sharing information and hopefully all learning together. So very cool. And thank you again for that submission. And another one is anonymous as well. And this person says, on many occasions around the ages of 4 and 5, my father would take me and my brother, 11 years older than me, to our grandfather's house around the Roxton-Brookston area of Texas. I forget which, both are pretty much the same and same location, made Mayberry look like a metropolis. Yikes, that's small. Anyway, my father had a house built for my grandparents on some land that still had the previous old house that they had lived in, which was run down, and the ruins of which were, at the time, had no roof, and the walls were collapsed. There was a bucket with holes in it, which I imagined at the time was some sort of pioneer shower. And for some reason, I wouldn't walk up to the old house. The new house was built before the 80s, sometime in the early to mid-70s, and these events take place around 1984 or 85. In the newer house, my father and grandfather would sit in the living room and talk while I was sent to a room that had a TV set that didn't work, and there I'd be told to color in the Pink Panther coloring book or play with the puzzle, and I'd do just that and get a weird feeling, like a strong presence. No noise of any kind, and I'd look at the TV and see a reflection of a person behind me that wasn't me or anyone I knew, but more pure shadow in the form of a person. I'd get scared and try running back to the kitchen, but the door would be shut and I couldn't get out, and I'd see a figure, no longer a shadow, but couldn't tell the race. Either it was a black man that was pale from drowning, or a white man that drowned and turned bluish. Like I said, I was only 4 or 5 years old, and my brother was too afraid to go into the house, so he'd be outside throwing a football on the roof and letting it roll down so he could catch it. And he tells me he's seen that man as well. His eyes would tear up when we talk about anything there. I'd finally get the door open, and my father and grandfather would look at me, wondering what the hell I was up to, and for some reason, I never did explain what I had seen. I was new to the world and didn't really realize certain things just weren't supposed to be. My grandfather would give me old people cookies, like wannabe golden Oreos, the wannabe golden Oreos, and then send me back into the room. Once I was back in the room, I'd noticed that coloring book wouldn't have any marks from where I had just proudly colored. Other times, the puzzle would be back in the box and on the shelf. And this happened on more than one occasion. One time, an old woman, my grandmother was dead, and no women were ever over there, with thick framed black glasses, would run her fingers down my spine and say, "Everything is okay, you'll be all right." And she'd also tell me, "You gotta put the toys up for the other kids." What other kids? I assumed it was some living relative until my brother had told, and dad also told me, no one came over ever. I'd see her on occasion, but it wasn't my grandmother as far as I knew. That room had sliding glass French doors and led to this dining room, which was filled with boxes. These doors had some sort of crystal ball effect as I'd look in and always see what appeared to be a Thanksgiving dinner being cooked and set on this long rectangular table, which wasn't in the room. Like I said, it was just boxes and stuff, just storage. And I'd see what looked like kids eating at the table, and I'd finally get the damn door open and ask my grandfather if the food is ready, and he and my father would look at me like I was absolutely nuts, saying, "What food?" And my grandfather would give me a banana. And I'd ask several times in a day, and this too many times in the same day and pretty much every trip there, I'd see this dinner and kids through the glass. And every time I'd bring it up, I'd get a banana. I guess it's like Pavlovian training there. Sometimes more than one even. And I think my grandfather might have been senile because it was as if he forget that he gave me a banana. And to this day, I still can't stand bananas. Oh, this is hilarious. All right, it continues on, ladies and gentlemen. It says, I would later be told by my brother and half-sister, 17 years older and never once at that house with us to visit, they used to have Thanksgiving dinner in that room when they were kids, and I described it, and a lady looking different than the one that would have put up the puzzle or coloring book, as I was still playing with them and not finished coloring, would be cooking the dinner. And it's my guess now that as far as this dinner is concerned, that it is recorded into the glass like a VHS tape or something, just stuck on a loop. And I assume it was my siblings as kids and that I was seeing now that I'm older. There was this porch swing on the porch and the porch was attached to the room with the TV that I was always in. And I'd often go and sit in the swing and watch my brother play outside, and this rocking chair next to the swing would rock by itself. Not like wind or anything, as it would sometimes stop in a mid-rock and then finish the rock and keep rocking, then stop, and then repeat. I'd be set loose in the yard on occasion to pick up pecans off the ground, and there were a lot of pecan trees, and I'd do this, and the ground would trip me. I knew how to walk, and walk well. I also know what the tree roots look like, and uneven ground and holes, what they are as well. There was nothing. I'd get scared, and I kid you not, something would grab my feet and trip over and over, not just once, especially if I tried to run. I'd try to run to the house to figure out where the grown-ups went, and it's like the landscape changed and the sky changed colors like, I don't know, a time warp or something. I was 5, and I don't know how to explain it. It's not the first time the sky changed either. Another time my brother and I started to walk down the dirt road and then turned back because the sky suddenly turned pink with black clouds several hours before nighttime, and we'd turn around to get back to the house and the sky would be normal again, but like missing time, it would be evening, and we walked for a couple minutes and it was 1 in the afternoon. One of the first experiences I had in that house was I was looking for the bathroom, and I hear a woman's voice tell me, "You're not supposed to be in here," when I'd opened the door to the bedroom by accident. I'd repeat that out loud, and then one time my brother was in the house sitting with the old folks and had this scared look on his face. There was a sewing dummy with an old dress, which I assume was my grandmother's, and this dress and dummy in the same day end up in different rooms. nobody touching it, and apparently my grandfather liked having it around. There was a garage that had this evil, creepy vibe, and there was this old classic car, and I'd sit around and listen, and then I'd see a body, the drowned black man on the ground, and I'd run straight for my dad and bring him there, and there would be nothing, no body, no vibe. There was a well on the property, and I won't get into it, but I associate it with that body. When we'd leave, my grandfather would sit on the porch swing and the rocker would rock by itself next to him. He'd wave and we'd be on our way home. Years later, for my father's funeral, I learned from my half-brother, who was 18 when I was born and had joined the Navy, that that land used to belong to a doctor who apparently went nuts and killed his family and all the help for no reason at all. Not that anyone knew of, anyway. First and only time my brother and I ever discussed the house, and apparently he refuses to go there to this day. I don't think he'd lie, but the story would explain a hell of a lot in terms of hauntings and all the strange vibes. Yeah, no kidding. Wow. That is an amazing group of events. And so there's two kinds of hauntings, ladies and gentlemen, and this is like Ghost 101 here, but I feel compelled to at least address it. And that is the whole idea between a residual haunt and an intelligent haunt. And I'm sorry if I'm preaching to the choir here, but a residual haunt that he explained, like the dinner scene that he kept seeing through the French glass doors, that's exactly what it is. He explained it as a VHS kind of recording, and it would just seemingly play itself over and over to his eyes. You know, I don't know. I would suspect perhaps for as much activity as this kid saw, that he may very well be a psychic or at least be very sensitive. And so it's very easy for him to experience these things, whereas other people may not have the same experiences at all, or maybe a much less version of them. So I would guess that this person probably has a pretty profound ability lying within them, whether conscious or unconscious, I don't know. But the whole residual thing will just repeat and repeat and repeat. And generally, there's not always a rhyme or reason to why it repeats. There's not always a trigger, but they just repeat from time to time. And apparently for this kid, it was like every time he looked at that window. So maybe he was able to view that energy pattern over and over and over at will. And that may be part of his gift, so to speak. But a residual haunt is not intelligent. It doesn't really interact with the people. It's not like the apparition that he's seeing, or the apparitions that he's seeing in this dinner scene are targeting him in any way, don't seem to be aware of his presence in any way. So it's not like there's an intelligence behind the images he's seeing. It's like the same as watching television. The actors aren't aware of you sitting there watching them, but you know, they continue to do what they're doing as if you're not there. Well, it's very much the same for a residual haunt. Now, an intelligent haunt is quite a bit different, and that is, for some reason or another, whether it's a human being that was alive, or if it was something else, perhaps a non-human entity of some kind, but in any case, it exists in this spiritual type of existence, and they will acknowledge the person, like the old woman that he'd see, was very acutely aware of him and his activities in the house, telling him it would be okay, you know, and telling him to put the toys up for the other kids. And, you know, it's very intelligently directed towards the child. So that is not just a recording. That is a presence, an intelligence that is there. Now, perhaps the other ones, he opened the door and you're not supposed to be in here. That's a very intelligent reaction. So that too would be an intelligent haunt. Whether they are one and the same entity, I don't know. There's no way to know from the narrative, but very profound and very powerful. Yeah, just really creepy stuff. I don't know. I think it's pretty wild though. And I think it'd be interesting to hear again, what this person has seen since then, or if this a lot of times, you know, children will, of course, be more sensitive. They will be able to perceive things much more easily than us adults. We seem to be pretty stuck in our ways. We seem to be pretty preoccupied with the world around us, and we don't have that clear vision that these young children have. Now, I don't know if it's by virtue of just being young that they're more wide open, or if it's just by virtue of being an adult, there are so many things that demand our attention. And so we can't focus as easily and as openly as children can. And so perhaps that's the discrepancy, but maybe it has to do with puberty. That's they're wide open until puberty, and then it may close down. It may stay open. And so that's where you have some gifted adults and some are not, but they had a period of their life where they were. So very, very interesting, and some really great food for thought, I think. But I hope you guys enjoy that little dialogue. I think it's a great story, though. I think it's really wonderful. So the next one is coming from a longtime listener of the show, and this is Lady Death. And she's been a part of the portal for a long time, and she submitted these stories quite a while ago, but I think they're really good. She says, number one, when I was 19, I was living in New Orleans, and at night my lampshade would spin, and the air conditioner was off, and I turned my fan off, and the shade was still spinning. So at night I would put the lampshade on the floor, and then my closet door would swing open. Couldn't explain it away, and got freaked out, so I would leave my closet door open at night. My house was a shotgun-style house, and what that means, ladies and gentlemen, is basically you have a front door, room, hallway, straight shot all the way from the front to the back, so you could basically shoot a shotgun through it, I guess is where that saying comes from. So she says, my house was a shotgun type of house, and my bedroom was in the very back, and I had a door leading to the outside through my bedroom. That deadbolted door with the knob, also locked, would be open in the morning. Oh, okay, so I got it now. Sorry, I was just reading that kind of skewed, but so she'd go to bed with it locked, and it would be wide open, standing open in the morning. Let's see. It says, my roommates made fun of me, and I moved out. My best friend moved into my old bedroom, and one night I slept over, and in the next morning, the back door was open. I asked, now do you believe me? Well, that's good. At least there's vindication there. And the second one she submitted was, when I was living in Charleston, Louisiana with my dad, I always thought he was getting up in the middle of the night to eat something, and I would hear footsteps going up and down the hallway. And one week, he went to work out of town, and I heard footsteps going up and down the hallway, and I hopped out of bed and locked my bedroom door and thought to myself, this won't keep a ghost out. These were big, loud feet shuffling footsteps. The neighbor's parents used to live in the house but had passed on, and I don't know for sure, but I think that may have been the other occupant or occupants in the house. I must say the creepiest occurrence, which happened twice, did not involve these footsteps. I was falling asleep on my side and felt someone sit right behind my back. I shot up in bed and whipped my head around, only to discover no one was there. That is incredibly profound. Wow, that's creepy. Those are really, really creepy ones, and I can't imagine. I have not experienced that myself, but to be laying in bed, I mean, when we're in bed, that's our safe place. You know, that's the place where we're going to become the most vulnerable we're ever going to be in our days. So we lock our doors, we secure our castle, so to speak, and we go to bed. And then what if you're in bed and you're just about to drift off and you feel someone come sit on your bed? No. Oh, that's horrible. I feel for you, lady. I don't know. Very, very wild. But again, very cool stories. And that's the beauty of the paranormal. You just don't know when it's going to happen. You don't even know why it's going to happen. It just happens. But especially with the spirit world. Now, we generally accept that in a lot of cases, many of these experiences were once human. These were human beings, and perhaps they still are. I don't mean to cast any kind of aspersion or or degradation at all. I mean, but you know, if that was their home, then I guess if that was a place that they loved and were comfortable, they may want to stick around. And why is that? Well, there's a lot of ideas. There's a lot of theories behind that. Do they stick around because they're worried about going on? Like maybe they didn't lead the most virtuous life. And maybe they'd heard throughout their whole existence that, you know, they're going to hell, you know, or they fear they're going to hell, you know, for the rest of eternity. So why not stick around this place, at least that they knew and felt comfortable, rather than facing this horrible potential possibility upon their passing? So, you know, I can understand that to a degree. I mean, it's got to be extra spooky, but, you know, I don't know. Now, I have heard several different versions. Me personally, it doesn't bother me too much if the spirits are around. I don't generally freak out from such things, and it's not because I'm so brave or anything. I don't know. It's just, for some reason, it just doesn't scare me. And maybe it's because the experiences I've had have not been really dark and horrible for the most part. I've had a few dark ones, but, you know, for the most part, they've just been experiences. And so I find it absolutely compelling and exciting, but, you know, I suppose I certainly could be scared. I don't know. It hasn't happened yet, but I'm not saying it can't either. So, it's just a curiosity, and it's a journey for all of us, I guess, but it's the one journey we're all going to take. But I don't know. I certainly wouldn't want to hang around a house for the rest of eternity. I think that would get incredibly boring. And, you know, then there's the thought that if they do hang around, can they go nuts? Just like if a person doesn't ever leave their house? I don't know. Food for thought, ladies and gentlemen. But I tell you what, we're going to take a break right now. So we will be right back for more listener mail here on the Paranormal Portal podcast. So don't go away. I'll be right here waiting for you. Everybody, welcome back to the second half hour of our journey tonight, and I hope you're enjoying it so far. I've absolutely loved doing the Paranormal Portal for all this time, and I find it absolutely magical, and I really do too. I mean, that sounds foolish, and I'm you know, tongue in cheek, of course, but I do find it absolutely fantastic, and I think that we all live and learn and you know, there's a lot to learn for the paranormal. So I think it's pretty amazing. But we're going to continue on our journey here tonight. And we are discussing listener emails. So these are emails that I received doing the Paranormal Portal from listeners. And these are experiences they've had with ghostly apparitions or hauntings. And, you know, if you've been paying attention, I think you'll agree there are some pretty fantastic stories. And this is what's out there. This is the stuff people are bumping into all of the time. So very cool. Now, the first one I'm going to read on this end of our journey is from a listener named Ruthie. And she's a wonderful lady. And this is her story. I'll start at the beginning. My very first experience of the paranormal at my house in Pasadena near L.A., it was a Sunday afternoon, and I was a very young, probably 4 years old to be exact, and my family was preparing to lunch at this time, and we had just come home from Sunday Mass, and my mother asked me to show my grandmother my new dress, which she had bought for me for Sunday Mass on Easter. So I did just that, and I remember all the warm noises of my grandparents talking and laughing in the kitchen, and my grandma putting out food on the stove, and etc. And as I entered my bedroom at the end of the hallway, last room in the house, facing west, I felt the sun as it was shining brightly through the windows, and I saw my dress hanging on the closet door, and it was just out of reach. And just as I had the thought, the dress started swaying left to right. I froze. Mind you, no one was there with me, and I was terrified. I couldn't move. I watched as the dress lifted off at the closet knob where it had been hanging, and I saw it slowly floating down to me. I remember staring at it in disbelief. I shook. When I could finally move my body, I ran out of the room frantically back to the kitchen, where it was safe, back to my mother and grandmother. My grandmother asked, "What's the matter? Where's your dress?" I just simply told her, "I can't reach it. It's too high." I wanted to tell them what really happened, but I just couldn't. My mother went into the bedroom and retrieved my new dress from the closet knob, and she told Grandma, "Oh, it really was too high for her to reach." I did not tell my mother about this incident until I was much older. I'd say I was probably around 13 years old, and that's when things started to escalate at our house. Talking about this opened up the conversation about my aunt seeing something in our house when she was a teenager. My grandfather had bought this house in 1953. Before that, the old house was here, was very old, probably built around 1910. Huh. So there was another house on that location prior to the house that they were familiar with. Wow. Wonder what happened there. I would suspect maybe a fire then. I don't know. I mean, I don't know why, but that's what comes to mind, that whatever it was, the house burned down, and of course another one was built in its place. So I would suspect potentially that maybe somebody lost their life in that. But again, that's, I don't know why I'm saying that. It's just wild speculation, but it came to my head. So I don't know. This is a dialogue, right? That portal's a dialogue. Well, that's the dialogue in my head, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to my world. But very cool, very cool. And again, I find great pleasure in these stories and these experiences. I think they're absolutely fascinating. Excuse me. So let me read this other one, and this comes from a listener, and he goes by the name of Summerled, and he says, "I live in Balfour, British Columbia, and I know that isn't far from you guys, and ladies and gentlemen, where the Paranormal Portal is basically headquartered in the very north tip of Idaho, so yeah, we are really close to British Columbia." And it says, "I know it isn't far from you guys, and I consider us neighbors." "I am a subscriber to the YouTube channel, and I catch most of your shows while relaxing in bed. Often I fall asleep while the show is on due to exhaustion, not boredom." Good save. "I want to share a paranormal encounter which occurred during the summer many moons ago. My cousin and I went to Spokane with family to attend Expo 74. I think he means in 1974. And I was 16 at the time, and my cousin Keith was 21. And we declined a ride back to Canada with my family and decided to stay Saturday and party for an extra day in Spokane. The following day, we set out hitchhiking back to the border. And the plan was to head out on Highway 2 and then head north on Highway 95 and up to Port Hill. My cousin's parents owned a store and gas station in Crawford Bay, and we were headed back there. Our first ride dropped us off in Sandpoint, and we walked through town and got some strange look from the locals, possibly due to us having long hair and looking rather young and out of place. The next ride that picked us up was a Jeep CJ soft top, which was off, and the guys were definitely rednecks, and they thought it was funny to take a right on a rural trunk road past the Pendere and drive us about 3 miles east and dump us out. I'm sure they had a good laugh as we trudged back towards Highway 2. It was getting later in the evening and traffic was scarce, but finally some old codger picked us up and gave us a ride about 5 miles and dropped us off just before dark, and we had no idea where the hell we were at this point and just kept walking. Needless to say, we're both absolutely tired. But eventually we saw some streetlights in the distance. And as we walked into the tiny hamlet of Colburn, the strangeness of the day's events and knowing we wouldn't make it to the border seemed to instill a genuine fear in us. On the west side of the highway, there was what we thought was a tavern, and the lights were on, and we could hear people talking inside. And Keith knocked on the front door, and as he did, all the lights went out. Not having a watch myself, I asked Keith what time it was, and he said midnight. It was pitch black, and we were like, what is going on? In retrospect, I guess the owners and a few patrons thought it unusual to have a couple vagabonds show up so late. So here we are standing in the dark and wondering what our next move was, when suddenly we heard all this growling and snarling, and some wild rabid, dog-like beast was right on us. I thought for sure we were going to get ripped to shreds, although we couldn't see the beast, and we were kicking away and flailing at thin air. I would guess this was what this went on for a good minute at least. Eventually, the beast, or whatever it was, left. We made it back to the highway, and there was a road that turned off to the right, and I'm guessing it was Colburn Culver Road, and there was a street lamp at the intersection, and we decided to hide up on the bank under some small pine trees and fir trees, and we had no sleeping bags, only jackets, but it was summer and wasn't really too cold. And I remember drifting off a couple of times, but there was no way I would fall into a deep sleep under these circumstances. Around 3 a.m., I was startled awake by what I thought was an old squeaky bike and could hear some gruff-sounding guy talking to himself. He seemed to be coming towards the intersection from the north on the east side of the highway. Then I saw what appeared to be one of those old bike headlamps, which generated its own current by the wheel turning, and as he got closer, I could hear the sound of a four-legged animal accompanying him, namely the sound of claws on the pavement. As they approached the intersection, I saw the headlamp, but nothing else, and I was like, no, this can't be. I woke Keith up quietly and pointed it out, and he was shocked. There was not a visual sign of them other than that ghostly headlamp and anything else, and the sound, rather. And I thought to myself, this is one creepy place, and I'll not be returning here anytime soon. We managed to drag our tails out and get a ride back to the border, and boy, oh boy, we had some stories to tell the family when we got back. So that's very cool. That is very cool. And that is an amazing story, and that's the kind of stuff that goes on, right? Now, that is really close to us as well, and to where we are. In fact, the Colburn-Culver Road is only like 15 minutes north on the road. So I hope that Don, you may not have heard me mention him yet, but he's my co-host on the show from time to time, and a great friend and a great addition to the show. And I'm sure if you stick around and continue to listen to the Paranormal Portal, you'll catch up with him as well. It's just a lot of fun. So, but he and I are going to do some investigating, hopefully this summer if we can, and maybe we can catch something of this ghost light and weird claws on pavement. I don't know if it's a dog or what it's supposed to be, but that is awesome. I mean, the awesome part is that they made it out okay. So, yes, it was a startle, it was a scare, it was uncomfortable, but they made it out. Nobody got hurt. Nobody's injured. And like you said, they got some stories to tell. So very cool. Very cool. And that's, you know, those are just great journeys. Just incredible. All right. So let's see. Okay. So this one is from a listener named Diana. And Diana writes, a few years ago, we lived in the suburbs outside of Kansas City, and my husband and I had our bedroom in the basement, as the hubby is always hot, and my brother, who lived with us, was always cold, so we switched bedrooms. My brother's room is now upstairs, and was across from my son's room, and my daughter's room was next to my son's. The kids' room were on the first floor, so every night I'd check to make sure the windows were locked, and then we'd go to bed. Well, it was a Sunday night, and I put the kids to bed, and the hubby and I went to bed, and we always sleep with the fan going. And I'm a pretty deep sleeper, and my husband definitely is, and snores like a grizzly, so I don't usually hear anything but maybe footsteps upstairs. I'm awoken up by the sound of my son screaming, "Mom!" There is a tone a child gets in their voice when a parent knows that something is truly wrong. Both my husband and I were immediately awake and alert, and we both jumped up and said, "What the hell?" Before I can get all the way out of bed, my son flies down the stairs. I mean, I'm not sure he even touched a stair on the way down. He is terrified, shaking, stark white, and stuttering, trying to talk, and he finally says, "There's a man in my room." My husband immediately grabbed a gun and was headed upstairs, and he then says, "I heard a man's voice, but no one was there." And he was definitely at the phase where he was lying, playing tricks, etc., but I knew by his reaction that he was not messing around, and he was genuinely terrified. I said, "What did he say? Did he hurt you?" And he told me the man just said, "Son, son." And what scares him was he didn't see anyone. My husband checked out the whole house and outside the house, and no one at the window, and the window was still locked. And I made my son a bed on the chair that we had that folds out flat, and was talking to him when I touched his forehead and I ran my hand over the side of his face. His skin was hot to the touch. I took his temperature and it was 103.3. I immediately gave him Tylenol and put a cool rag on his neck, and as I was sitting by him asking him if he felt nauseous, it dawned on me. He had been fine all weekend, nothing out of the norm, and if that voice hadn't woken him up, who knows how his fever would have went. And what was odd is he never woke up my brother that was 10 feet away from his room. Yet we heard him scream downstairs. If he'd woken up my brother would not have caressed his face to know that he had a fever. My son's fever broke and everything was fine. I think it was an angel that woke him up, because "son" is such an odd thing for the voice to have said. My son is 13 and still vividly remembers that night. I often wonder if he is sensitive because he has had some experiences over the years, or we have had experiences and they always seem to be tied to my son in some way. Those are the wonderful stories, ladies and gentlemen. Those are the cool ones where, you know, something really good happens as a result of these experiences. You know, it's not just spooky, scary, shocking things. It's something wonderful, like an intervention, a divine intervention. And I understand there is probably for most of you a difference between an angel experience, an angelic experience, and a ghostly experience. But which was it? Which was this? Could it have been a grandfather that had passed that woke up the child? Could it have been a deceased relative? Could it have been just a random ghost who had a lot of love and caring and didn't want to see this child get hurt? I don't know. I mean, those are all considerations, right? But very exciting and cool and nonetheless. And it certainly made all the difference in the world in this experience for this child and this family. So I don't know. Just think if it hadn't happened, though, as she said in the story, what if he hadn't woke up? What if he hadn't been jarred awake to experience that voice and ran downstairs to his mom? And then who then found out he had the high fever? I mean, what then? What if his fever continued to climb until he went into a coma or something? I'm just thrilled that everything worked out okay. I mean, that's the tough part about being a parent is, you know, just knowing that you have to protect your kids and you don't want any harm to come to them. And what started off as an absolutely spooky, shocking tale ended up being a godsend. So that's the beauty of it, I guess, right? And who's to know? Now, in many of these hauntings, it's hard to know. I mean, while people are generally really shocked and scared and taken off their balance and confused by these experiences, when they happen, we just assume they're shocking, scary experiences. I mean, we just write them off like, well, that sucked. The cupboard door opened. Well, what if the cupboard door hadn't opened? So this is just a hypothesis, right? But it's what I do all the time on the show. It's what if the cupboard door hadn't opened and it hadn't stopped you from going forward? And if you hadn't stopped going forward, you know, could there have been some kind of a problem that you would have encountered that could have caused you great bodily harm? Like you're trying to run out the door. You're late for work. Where are my keys? I can't find my keys. I always put them here. Why aren't they here? Oh my God, this is horrible. It's terrible. My keys are missing. I can't go to work on, and I don't know where they are. And you hunt and hunt and hunt and hunt, you know, for 5, 10, 15 minutes, and boom, suddenly they're in the place where you always leave them, that you already checked 5 times. And that story comes up all the time, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. I've heard that dozens of times since starting to do this show. Now, yeah, it's a hindrance. It's a nuisance. And initially you go, well, that sucks. Why are they screwing around like that? Well, perhaps if you had left at the time you intended, if your keys had been there, could you have potentially faced a fatal car accident? Could you have potentially not been looking at the road well enough and hit a child? Could that event have saved you so much problems? So my point in saying all of this is that we are really quick to judge these experiences when perhaps they are more divine intervention than we think. Perhaps these things happen because they are saving us in some way. You know, and I can't pretend to know. I don't know for sure, but I think that these are the kind of things that need to be considered when you're examining paranormal events, when you're looking at what has happened and what does it potentially mean? Well, it could mean some amazing things. So just some, hopefully some good food for thought. And I hope you guys share that idea. Now, there's very few examples of divine intervention, but perhaps that's just because they were never examined fully. And we can never know what could have happened, right? Because that's no longer a part of our reality. Whatever could have happened didn't happen. And so it's a non-issue. But I think it's important to step back and not be too quick to judge these kind of things, because who knows? Who knows what the divine intent was? Or, you know, and I don't mean to be religious sounding at all. I mean, I don't tout a religion on the show. That's not what the show is about. The show is about phenomena. But when I say divine intervention, I'm not saying, I'm not tying that to any religious practice or ideals. I'm just saying perhaps it was a higher good that was activated at that point. So I just want to make that clear, because this isn't a show about religion. My idea is just to believe whatever resonates with you, because that's what's powerful. And in any religion, if you believe in it with your heart and soul, if you have faith in it with your heart and soul and your conviction of everything that you are, then it is a powerful thing. If you just exercise a religion because you think you're supposed to and you have no heart or soul in it, then you might as well just be sitting back eating crackers and watching, you know, commercials on TV. It's just that powerful. If, you know, it's how it works. Because energy follows intention. And if energy follows intention, then when something is passionate and important to you, it's going to be completely magnificently energized. If something is just an exercise that you do because you think you should, then it's empty and it's weak and largely powerless. So just some closing thoughts on that. But ladies and gentlemen, I think that's going to wrap up our first journey here on the Portal Paranormal Portal podcast. So I hope you've enjoyed it so far, and I hope you continue to subscribe and check out the shows. We will be always 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, there will be a new Paranormal Portal podcast for you to check out wherever you get your podcasts from. So love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. And thank you so much for checking out the Paranormal Portal. And I will see you all the next time.
Betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.